Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is photographer, writer, curator, and filmmaker Ricardo Barros. An exhibition of his work called An Entanglement of Time and Space will be at Arts Worcester November 15th to December 17th. Ricardo, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much. I feel very honored to be here.
Well, that's misplaced. Now, let's first of all talk about the show that's going to be at Arts Worcester. It's going to be up there from November 15th to December 17th of this year at Arts Worcester, right next to WICN, as a matter of fact. And it's called An Entanglement of Time and Space. Tell me what people can expect if they go to see your work. What is this body of work like?
Well, to begin with, they're photographs, and they're fairly large scale. So, but more significantly, they are 360-degree photographs that have been flattened. So there is a certain distortion that is unavoidable in the presentation of these images. But beyond that, the photographs themselves show a world that most of us are not very familiar with overtly, although I think people implicitly understand them, in that they show an event in its entirety. So you know the beginning and the end of the event, and you see it all at once.
How did you come across this as a form for expressing what you're looking at? Because I know that you've done a lot of things. We're going to talk about that in a second. But what did you arrive at? What was appealing to you about this methodology?
Well, I had a career as a professional photographer, and at a certain point, I learned of the virtual reality mode of photography, and I thought, that's something new, that's contemporary. I wanted to learn that, and this technology that I'm using comes from that field. Essentially, they're 360-degree photographs that are then plugged into the various programs, and on the computer, we experience them as Google Street View, where you can choose where to look. And so I was mildly interested in it. Once I discovered how to do it, I was mildly interested in that. But I was really interested in an intermediate step to make those photographs, which and the way that you make these photographs is quite relevant, actually. The real estate photographers in Google Street View can do it much more quickly than I can, but I do it in higher resolution. So I place a camera on a tripod, and the camera and the tripod, well, the tripod is stationary, and the camera rotates 360 degrees laterally and 360 degrees vertically. And I take I take a minimum of like about 42 shots and stitch them together.
Okay, first of all, there's a lot of things I have to talk to you about this. Number one, you have to get out of the way.
Yes.
So where are you hiding in these photographs? Do people ever see you in any of these works, like peeking up from behind a bush or something?
Well, they actually, I intentionally get in the photographs.
Okay.
Because sometimes the camera's on the tripod, I'll put a little self-timer on it, or I'll control the camera remotely, and I'll go and be in the photograph because I want the photographs to be telling a story.
Sure.
And the stories are typically something that's going on in my life or an observation that I find relevant to me at that time. But I think your question is about how do you photograph down and not see your own feet? Is that what you're asking?
Well, when you're doing the vertical as opposed to the horizontal, first of all, I don't know anything about this technology. I mean, I know that it exists. But you must have a very special tripod that allows the camera to go 360 degrees in the vertical.
Yes. Okay, right. So the reality, and this is...
And by the way, for everybody listening, the photographs are really beautiful, and we're being technical about this, but go see the show to see what the photographs are like.
Right. Okay. So here's a magician, you know, disclosing part of the trick.
Okay. But that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I can photograph vertically up, and yep. I can photograph down, you know, to say, probably instead of looking down, if looking down is 0 degrees, I can photograph to maybe 15 degrees or so, in which case, when I make those photographs, I do see the tripod legs and my toes and whatnot. But what I do...
You edit those out.
I edit those out, and then I just hold the camera laterally in my hand and photograph the floor, and then stitch in that extra last photograph to fill
wow.
in the hole.
This must be amazing to watch you take one of these photographs, or actually the number of photographs, because imagine it's like some kind of weird ballet.
It is. It's somewhere between a ballet and making a movie. And
I'm, yeah, yeah.
In directorial mode.
Is there a documentation of you making one of these photographs? Several of these photographs?
Not yet.
Somebody should do that, you know, well, Ricardo, because this is like an extraordinary process.
Well, here's the next best thing. A photograph that I'm making at the very moment is being made over a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the camera set up in the gallery at Arts Worcester right now.
Okay.
And I'm making one of these photographs entitled The Life Cycle of a Gallery Show.
Oh, nice.
And I am photographing the previous show coming down, the gallery people painting the walls, spackling, and doing all that. And then I'm photographing me then putting the work up. And then I'm going to photograph the actual gallery reception with people in it. So in the finished photograph, you're going to see everything from start to finish in the entire life cycle.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah.
Now, do you systematically time out when the shots are going to be taken, or do you just take them when something interesting is going on?
Well, a little bit of both.
Okay. So, cool.
Yeah. So most photographers work, and I'm going to say opportunistically, and I don't mean that in a judgmental way, but they're out in the world, and they see something, and they have their camera, and they photograph it. And so those quite often are chance encounters. Mm. Or they'll go somewhere, they might make an appointment, and then they photograph what happens there. I photograph what I call purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
Where I actually don't walk around with a camera. I find something that I want to photograph because it provokes my curiosity, and I return with a camera, typically by appointment, to make a photograph. But what is different now in these photographs is that previously I would see something and I'd want to return to photograph it. But with these photographs, this particular photograph I'm making right now, I have an idea of what I want the photograph to be before I even see it. And so I'm like, and the concept is a life cycle of a gallery show. So I have that idea, and now it's like a hypothesis. I'm going into the world to find evidence to support that hypothesis.
Got it. Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But if I can just stop you again, when you have all the set of photographs, they have to still, and the examples that I've seen on your website, and Ricardo, give out your website.
It's ricardobarros.com, ricardobarros.com.
Now, you're not just taking and stitching these things together randomly, because aesthetically, visually, they're really beautiful works.
Well, thank you.
So you're making aesthetic choices, too, and when you're choosing what to stitch into the final work.
Oh, absolutely. So there is plenty of opportunity for chance, because oftentimes, well, actually always, I don't know what the finished photograph is going to look like until I actually see it. That's number one. Visually, you know, with the distortions. And B, it's that people moved, things happened.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And the way that this process works is if you imagine just a lateral circle and you're in the center of it, okay? If there's somebody standing at, say, 45 degrees, then they're blocking everybody behind them at 45 degrees. So I can allot in the finished photograph, you know, from, say, 43 degrees to 47 degrees, that space, because that space is already taken. And if I want to include anybody else, they have to be somewhere else in the picture. So I just photograph like crazy. And so I might make like 300 photographs.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go and choose so that I have the most representative combination that tells the story I want to tell.
So unlike traditional photographers, the photograph for you is only the starting point. And it's the process of developing them over time in different perspectives and then stitching them together. That's the process that creates your work.
That's the process. And underlying all that is a story.
Now, are people going to be able to know the story, or do you put that in the label, or do you just have them like look at it and sort of make a story up in their head?
Well, the story can be complex or it can be simple, and so in some cases they can tell immediately. In others, they need a little bit of help. So, for example, because the process takes, it happens over an interval of time. A person that appears in one photograph in one shot. Composite shot may reappear in a different shot in a different location in the same photograph. So they appear twice. And we know in real life, people don't just disappear and reappear. So there is, so the viewers are invited to say, well, wait a minute, which came first? They went from here to there. And so people are provoked into creating their own
timeline
sequence of events.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
So there's that interpretation. So that's the easy one. But there are others. For example, in another one, I photographed the transition from night to day.
Hmm.
And I made a photograph. So on the left-hand side of the photograph, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and it's nighttime. And then as you progress across the photograph from left to right, it's 6 o'clock in the morning on the right. So it's dark on the left and then light on the right. But confounding this whole thing is that the process that I'm using is a 360 degree photograph. So in reality, well, not in reality, if you were to put this together into Google Street View, okay, you go out the right hand side, you come in the left.
Right.
So it all gets confounded.
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
It is a joy. I
love it, you know. Now, the ones that I've seen are in color.
Yes.
Now, previously, you've worked in black and white.
Yes. So my path through photography, I started out with black and white photography with large format. I was using an 8x10 view camera.
Mm.
It's the type with sheet film, a tripod, a cloth over your head, and you know it takes like 20 minutes to wait, make one picture. So it's from the technology is from like 1900, and I was making photographs that were black and white of landscapes, very formal. Along the lines of Ansel Adams and Edward Weston.
Yeah, I could see that in these early photographs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt that that was the pure vision. But at a certain point, for me, I realized, well, wait a minute. I'm actually, I'm carrying their banner. I'm basically keeping their legacy alive, and it certainly deserves to be appreciated. But I wasn't moving the conversation forward.
Got it.
And to move the conversation forward, I had to be of my own time and say and observe and discover things that were insightful to me. And that's how I progress from the black and white into the color.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is photographer, writer, curator, and filmmaker Ricardo Barros. An exhibition of his work titled An Entanglement of Time and Space will be at the Arts Worcester Gallery November 15th to December 17th this year. Ricardo, I want to ask about some of your past works.
Sure.
Talk to me about the Riverside Silos.
So, one thing always leads to another. There are links in a chain. And so the Riverside Silos was another link. But to understand it, first I have to tell you the previous project. The previous project was photographing graffiti writers.
Wow.
And I followed a crew of graffiti writers for about 7 years.
Wow.
And I was photographing their work, and it was in magnificent color. They were extraordinary. But one of the realizations that I had after a certain point was, number one, I was photographing another artist's work, and so that the challenge was to make my own photograph of their work. But I was almost like a passenger on their train, you know, and what they did, I was not quite documenting because I was interpretive. That was number one. And number two, it was in these very saturated colors. So then, for my next project, I said, no, I want to go back to where I'm the conductor of the train. I'm not a passenger. And so I wanted to make my own photographs, and I wanted them to be black and white to break from the color work. And I noticed, this is one of those things that when something is so familiar, you become blind to it.
Oh, yeah.
But so my studio was located in an industrial park. And every day when I would go to my studio, I'd drive through the gate to the industrial park and go to my studio, park my car, and go up inside. But along that path between the gate and my studio door, there were these silos, and they held Portland cement that was imported from Korea and I'm not sure where else. And then one day I actually saw them, and I looked at them, and it was like they were these huge, massive spheres and cylinders.
Yeah.
And I thought they were beautiful. And then I realized that they were like a still life on an artist's table, because they were just shapes, and the shapes were being formed by light. And the scale and its enormity really impressed me. And so I went on this project of photographing. There were three silos, and they were different in every light. And so my whole project became of photographing those three silos in how they changed in different light, different weather conditions, different seasons.
Wow.
And it wasn't just about how different they were, but it was about being present. It was, how are they now? And they were continuously different in the present tense, and I wanted to be aware of that.
I love those photographs. And they're, again, for people who are listening, they're on your website. And we're going to run out of time. There's a project that you did. You call it a portfolio, 2013 to 2020, called Figuring Space. Can you just say a few words about that?
Oh, sure. So
that sort of seems like it'd be a whole other interview.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the interesting thing about Figuring Space is that it, in certain ways, it's a link that led to the current project with an entanglement of time and space. So the that project arose from a conversation I had with my wife Heather Barros, who's also an artist. And her idea was to create a frame that was maybe 30 inches by 36 inches or something like that. And she wanted to put a figure inside that frame and push against the edges of the frame. And so that when she painted the picture, she would paint, the edge of her canvas would be the inside of the frame, and it would look like the people she was painting were pushing against the edge of her canvas. So I said, hey, I really like that idea, and I wanted to do it, and I was going to do it with a figure, with the nude figure. So I built a box, and the box had the exact proportions of my camera viewfinder, and so that when I moved the camera in close, then people would be pushing against the edge of my viewfinder, or seemingly pushing against. But my box had depth, and you could see the back opening of the box, or the square that was deep inside. And I realized that there was a fallacy in her concept, you know, according to my needs. The fallacy was that there was intervening space between the two faces.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said, well, wait a minute, that's space. And how do you photograph space? And that became a challenge because space is invisible. I mean, it only exists in our minds, and we are only aware of it when it ends. And then I thought of space as a metaphor, where space can be the space between people in a relationship. For architects, it's how people progress through a given setting. For a person who's grieving, it's space as a loss. Space could be so many different things. And so I was photographing the figure within the confines of my box, the space, to try to understand what space meant, and then so that's the figure in space.
Wow. Now there's a video part of this, isn't there?
Yes. So I made, so that was fairly complex.
Oh, yeah.
What I did. So I found that I needed to present people with a little bit more context. And so I made a video describing what I was doing. And in the video, you see not only the photographs, but you also see me making the photographs. One thing I wanted to mention, too, is that in photographing space, another one of my inspirations there were the bas-reliefs, like the hieroglyphs, Egyptian hieroglyphs. Glyphs or the Assyrian hieroglyphs.
Oh, the ones that are raised up off the surface.
Yes.
Okay.
Just slightly raised. They're maybe raised by, maybe half an inch
sure.
or so, but you look at them and you see depth. And so I wanted to see if I could compress space or expand space, but I wanted to do it within the context of that box. So I was always, I never moved the camera. I was only photographing the exact same space, but I was using light to change the amount of perception or perceived space within that box.
What's great listening to you to talk about your work is you're working very much like an experimental scientist. And that you have different ideas, and you're trying out a lot to see what actually comes out of it. And I find that fascinating. You're really exploring space. In a lot of your work. We're going to run out of time. There's still so much I have to ask you about. Now, on your website, there's this essay by you called Reflections on a Roosting Muse.
Oh, yeah.
What okay. the? What? I have it right in front of me. What's that about?
Okay, so that photograph depicts... A nude figure. She's very discreet, but she's roosting, literally. She's squatting on the top of a bed frame, the headboard of the frame, and she's taking notes. let me just back up because this is.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, so cut to the quick.
Okay, well, so the idea is that the muse is taking notes, and then she's going to sprinkle them on the artist who's sleeping below, and he's going to have dreams and then come up with the artwork. Well,
your essay contains an entire history of the idea of the muse, too.
Yeah. The muse, it used to be that people didn't write, that they just had to remember things, and muses... the muse was a goddess of memory. So the muse would be the inspiration for the storytellers and the poets who would talk, at great length about the stories of the great heroes.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, sublime knowledge, as you write in the essay, is in danger of slipping from memory's mortal grasp. So yeah. It's very possible that we could lose the inspiration for our artwork.
Well, I think that actually does happen quite a bit. I mean, sometimes many people, probably everybody, has a dream and they're so enchanted by the dream, and then they wake up and they have a difficult time holding on to it, and then within moments after you wake up and the world comes into focus, you lose it. So that's what that was about.
It's amazing. First of all, give out the website address again.
It's ricardobarros.com. Thank you.
Yeah, you should definitely go there because there's much more work that we haven't even had a chance to talk about. My guest tonight has been Ricardo Barros. He's a photographer, a writer, a curator, a filmmaker, and an exhibition of his work, which you really have got to see, is called An Entanglement of Time and Space, is going to be at Arts Worcester, November 15th to December 17th. The website for Arts Worcester, by the way, is on the description for this interview that'll be on the WICN webpage. And are you going to give a talk?
Yes. So in December, let me...
Just give it the day, because that's it. We have no more time.
Oh, geez. I think it's December 15th, but check the website because I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. Ricardo, it's been a real pleasure. It's been fun.
Mark, thank you. It's my privilege. Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.